Welcome to Words and Pictures, the show about the narrative arts. I'm your host, S.W. Konser, here at the Portland Book Festival. And my guest today is an artist and writer whose work has appeared in the New York Times Magazine, Harper's, Vogue, and The Atlantic. She's also the art director and deputy publisher at the magazine, The Believer, and the author of two graphic nonfiction books, Imagine Wanting Only This and Seek You, A Journey Through American Loneliness. Kristen Radke, welcome to Words and Pictures.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind all of our listeners that we are currently in the midst of KBOO's all-important end-of-the-year membership drive. We hope that you've been enjoying our special programming and that you'll take a moment to become a member of KBOO. Because we're still being cautious and not yet opening up our studios, we don't have volunteers in the station to take your calls right now. But you can show your support by giving online, kboo.fm, or text KBOO to 44321. KBOO is one of the very last media outlets that still brings you local and independent news, music, and public affairs. We've been doing this here in Portland for over half a century, and this program has been coming to you for nearly 18 years now, inviting important cultural figures into the studio and venturing out to events that might fly beneath the radar of the big media monoliths. So yes, you can support this very special programming today by going online to kboo.fm/give, or simply text KBOO to 44321. And if you prefer to go analog, we're always happy to receive a contribution in the mail. The address of the station is 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, 97214. So you're here at the Portland Book Festival, and you have an event that's happening at the Portland Art Museum. It's an in-person event.
It is. I love Portland. I think Portland's a really amazing place. It's a wonderful place for books. I think the Portland Book Festival is a really rare festival in that it's just so well attended. It's really amazing. Amanda Bullock and the team who puts it on are just incredible. And also after a pandemic, I'm just really happy to go any place.
Well, speaking of the pandemic, let's talk about Seek You, A Journey Through American Loneliness. It's a book that does seem particularly relevant in the wake of the COVID pandemic, but it is a project that you started in 2016.
Yeah. I started writing about loneliness in 2016, or I guess I started drawing about loneliness in 2016. I didn't really realize I was working on, I think it takes me a long time to realize what I'm drawing or writing towards and understanding what the subject is. And I was very interested in isolation and loneliness, but didn't really think about it in a critical way. And then in 2016, I just started researching it and got really into it in 2017. And it sort of snowballed from there.
Well, Americans love the myth of the rugged individual, especially these days that's become almost a political wedge. There's a real distrust whenever the idea of communal effort is brought up. Either it's dismissed as socialism or something ancient and quaint, like how the Amish community operates.
That's so true. And I think that's a super backwards way of thinking. I mean, communal, we all need each other to survive. And I think one of the reasons that we're in a loneliness crisis in America and in a lot of countries, particularly a lot of wealthy countries, is believing that we're all self-sufficient and that our actions don't impact one another and that we're not responsible for our neighbors, for their livelihood in the same way we're responsible for ours. So I think really the argument behind the book is an argument for community and collective thinking.
So we have this situation right now where work is changing. As an artist myself, I find that a lot of studios are getting rid of their spaces and just having people freelance from their homes. So there's not this give and take in the workplace anymore, that same level of knowledge transfer that used to happen back in the old days when you were side by side with coworkers. And that seems like a loss we haven't really reckoned with yet.
I would agree. I think it's about finding new ways to connect if we're not all in the same space. And whether that's, talking with artists that you trust and respect about what you're working on or something like that, like finding new ways for feedback. But it's hard to get, you know, there's less happenstance. There's less chance now of like kind of an unexpected conversation that can become really fruitful for your work. So I think that's one of the things we haven't quite mourned yet.
It's interesting that you say mourning. It's like we are in a way mourning the death of a consensus that we had in the United States, that we had communities that we pulled together, that we helped each other out. And where are we right now in that process?
Well, I think it's an interesting question because I think that we also have a tendency to idealize the past. And there were a lot of ways in which Americans have not supported each other for a really long time, for generations, really. And particularly, I think, depending on the community and depending on, you know, how homogenous that community is. I think one of the things that I saw that was quite positive during the pandemic was that we, you know, mutual aid groups were formed. People, I think, started caring for their neighbors and recognizing the responsibility of caring for their neighbors in a way they maybe hadn't before. But we need to be doing that kind of work all the time, not just during emergencies. So I think that's like one of my big hopes for the pandemic is that we will remember how essential this has been to support each other and continue to do that.
You quote Vivek Murthy, a former Surgeon mm-hmm. General, who said that the most prevalent health issue in America is isolation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, isolation is problematic for a number of reasons. So one of them is that science has proven that you actually die sooner when you're isolated, when you're lonely. You're less likely to be able to fight infection, disease. You're more likely to have a heart attack. You're more likely to get cancer. On average, people who are chronically lonely die 7 years sooner than people who are not. You're more likely to die prematurely if you live alone. There are all these statistics in these ways. So that's very dangerous. The other reason that it's not even just like kind of our biological need to stay healthy, but it's also about mental health and how we support each other. The more isolated we are, the less likely we are to have problematic opinions challenged or to feel reinforcement and support when we need it. So isolated thinking is often can often morph into pretty aggressive thinking, because we don't have community members to kind of pull us back into reality.
So the book, Seek You, it's an interesting mesh of research about loneliness and also your personal stories, your personal mm-hmm. journeys around America and around the world. Mm-hmm. America in particular has a loneliness problem that really supersedes what you find most places around the world.
Yes, definitely. So America is not the loneliest country in the world, but it is one of them. It scores very high in the loneliness index. The UK is also quite lonely. Certain Scandinavian countries, Japan has really high loneliness index. And it's usually countries where the workload is quite high, where people are focused pretty intensely on work, and in countries where people tend to delay things like marriage and childbirth or forgo it altogether and live alone. It correlates usually to higher loneliness scores, which isn't to say that getting married and having kids is a solution to loneliness, because I talk to many, many, many people who are in happy marriages or have children who I still feel a great deal of loneliness. So it's definitely not a solution, but it is just a correlation. But I think in America, it's sort of about an American ideology. And I think it goes back to individualism, this idea that there's like an outsider equality to America. America loves an underdog story, but an underdog is usually alone. And so I think there's some problematic ways of thinking about how much we need each other and how much we can really do by ourselves, for sure.
So there's a bit of wordplay in the title of the book, Seek mm-hmm. You. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So in amateur radio, when someone is calling out across an airwave, they will use what is called a CQ call, the letters C and Q, and it's just like a calling out to ask if anyone's on that same wavelength and anyone who's listening can answer. So it's just basically like a reaching out to a stranger to start up a conversation. It can be about anything. It's usually just like casual and friendly. And over time, the letters C and Q stood in for CQ. And I thought that that was just such a beautiful thing to do, to kind of reach out and just want to talk to a stranger about anything, you know, from your point in the world, and then talk to somebody on, maybe on the other side of the planet, or someone you're never going to meet face to face. And that, it seemed to me like really the kind of the heart of the project and what I was suggesting that we do as people.
Having been born in London, my take on the isolation that happens there, well, London and Tokyo both have a lot of people living in really close proximity, mm-hmm. and they like to pretend like they don't. Like if they're in a crowded space, like on a subway train, they like to carve out their small little bubble where they're mm-hmm. completely isolated and pretending like there's nobody around them. There's a quote from the book where you say that living in a city can become a practice in containing the hostility we feel for the strangers we live alongside. Annoyance when a man's leg is pressed up against ours in a packed subway car, tempering our rage-filled glances at someone vocal frying to their friend for playing tinny music from a cell phone.
Yeah. So actually, statistically, yes, people who live in cities do experience lower levels of loneliness than people who live in more rural communities. But I think there is a part of the way that we survive in cities is by shutting out a lot of sound and a lot of visual and auditory disturbances, because it's really the only way to get through the day. So that also does lead to a fair amount of like mini moments of isolation where we're not really engaging with people around us, for sure.
Well, you go to Las Vegas, you mm-hmm. You take a trip to Las Vegas, and Las Vegas is famous for having the phrase, what happens in Vegas stays in mm-hmm. Vegas, as if, you know, everything you do just disappears into the void. Mm-hmm. So there's this sense of no accountability. And accountability is kind of part and parcel of community when you get down to it.
Definitely. Absolutely. I mean, like, trust is one of the most essential building blocks for community and for social connection. I mean, I think like one of the reasons that Las Vegas is very interesting from a loneliness perspective is that people assume an identity upon Las Vegas that isn't necessarily fair, because they're thinking about tourist areas of Las Vegas and not the areas that real people live in and real communities thrive. And there is a really thriving community of arts and culture in Las Vegas. But I think there are sort of like loud, obvious metaphors for loneliness in Las Vegas, in casinos and things like that, through a very familiar imagery, I think, of what we associate with loneliness.
Gabino Iglesias at NPR said that the beauty of CQ is that it feels like a communal experience. Reading this book is reading about ourselves and our lives. What's the conversation that you're trying to start with this book?
That's a good question. I guess conversation in general is what I'm trying to start with this book. Like, I want us to talk to each other more. I want us to spend more time with each other. I want us to rely on each other more. I want us to be more honest with each other. I want us to recognize that our loneliness and then use it to sort of propel us towards each other.
And what's the benefit of creating a book like this in comics form with art?
I don't know if there's a benefit. It's just the way that I make books. So it was kind of my only option. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think it's very interesting for me, like the process of creating art, when I can communicate in words and pictures, words and images. You can create an argument with an image in the same way you can with text. And so it's fun to me to think about how they interact with each other and how they communicate.
Well, the images are really evocative in the book, and you've got a lot of dark tones mm-hmm. that you use. I'm sort of reminded of a lot of European comics who use this mix of cold and warm colors to really evoke an emotional state.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. Yeah. The palette is something that took a lot of time to figure out. This is my first book in color. And so it was a lot of trial and error. And I also wanted to create a limited palette so that I could have a distinct palette for each chapter, so there could be some movement throughout the book. So that was a big challenge, honestly, because color is really its own language. It says, it speaks to a point of view, it creates a mood and all those things. So it took me some time to figure out what those colors were saying and what they said together.
You're listening to Words and Pictures. I'm your host, S.W. Konser, and we're talking today with Kristen Radke. She's the author of the graphic novels Imagine Wanting Only This and Seek You, A Journey Through American Loneliness. Before we get back to the conversation, I'd like to take a moment to remind our listeners that KBOO is in the midst of our end-of-the-year membership drive, now through December 31st. We hope that you've been enjoying our special Portland Book Festival programming and that you'll take a moment to become a member of KBOO. Our studios are still closed to phone volunteers, but we have all sorts of options for donating. If you'd like to pledge on the web, you can visit kboo.fm/give. You can also text KBOO to 44321. And if you prefer to go analog, we're always happy to receive a contribution in the mail. The address of the station is 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, 97214. Again, the webpage is kboo.fm/give. On your mobile device, you can text KBOO to 44321. And of course, you can reach us by mail at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, 97214. And now let's talk some more with Kristen Radke. So Kristen, we're talking about comics, and you have had a lot of opportunities to interact with comics artists. You're the art director at The Believer. It's a magazine.
I was the art director at The Believer. I'm now the art director at The Verge.
Okay.
But I was the art director at The Believer for about 4 years and got to work with a ton of really amazing cartoonists. I'm going to be doing the same thing at The Verge. I'm also going to be working with cartoonists. I'm excited to do that there too.
Well, that's fantastic. The Believer and The Verge are both magazines that have managed to survive the 21st century culling of so much of print media.
Yes, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but The Believer is not going to survive much longer. It's producing its last issue very shortly.
Wow.
So it will be one of the print tragedies.
Oh, well, I'm sorry to hear that. I mean, it's been around for, gosh, almost 20 years.
Almost 20 years, yeah.
Yeah, it used to be published by Dave Eggers Independent Press, McSweeney's. And, well, some of the people you've worked with have also been guests on the show here. I mean, Charles Burns has been a featured illustrator, Tony Millionaire, Michael Kupperman, Hilbert Hernandez, and The Believer had a comic section that had Anders Nilsson and Matt Fury and Lily Carre, people like that.
It was a wonderful, it was a great privilege to get to edit that section.
So are you going to bring those folks over to The Verge then?
So I'm definitely working with some of them. Yeah.
Anything to announce? Any projects? Anything interesting?
I have a comic coming up with Gina Weinbrandt, who's a wonderful cartoonist that I'm very excited about.
All right.
And that will be up next year.
So Seek You, A Journey Through American Loneliness, it seems to be kind of a counterpart to your earlier book, Imagine Wanting Only This. The book is about ruins, really, ruins of civilization, not just ancient ruins, but modern day ruins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It took me a while to understand the trajectory between those two books. I think I didn't really necessarily see them as having a lot of in common, but it's really interesting to hear readers kind of see that arc.
So you start out traveling locally around Chicago, and you come across these places that are industrial cities. They're emptied out largely. Mm-hmm. They have entire buildings that look, you said, like somebody rang a fire alarm and nobody came back.
Yeah. Which is a lot like what I think our office buildings look like now after 2 years of the pandemic.
Even in Brooklyn.
Oh yeah. I mean, I work at Vox Media and we're not back at the office. You know, a handful of people will go in at a time, but it still looks a little bit like a ruin.
So this is interesting. I mean, Brooklyn seems like a place where property is valued. People live side by side, that there wouldn't be a lot of emptied out properties, but this is what's
happened. Of emptied out workplaces, okay. A lot of emptied out office buildings because most offices haven't returned to full capacity.
Let's talk about Kentucky. You spent some time in Kentucky here.
Yeah.
And Kentucky is considered one of, if not the most isolated states in the US and one of the saddest. And
it's the second saddest state in America after West Virginia.
And, you know, again, it's a place that has all of these communities that were built up that have this myth of being a small town, a great place to live, you know, all of this fellow feeling. And that seems to have just been abandoned. And there are all these reasons that people give. There's drug epidemics, there's the moving overseas of industrial workplaces, but it really comes down to what is our shared culture. So talk a little bit about your experiences when you were visiting these areas around Appalachia.
I lived in Kentucky for a couple of years. I think moving to a new place in general is very difficult. When I did interviews for CQ, a lot of stories that I heard were stories about the people's loneliest experiences were those in moments of transition, like a move, a new job, a new relationship, or the end of a relationship, things like that. And so I was definitely experiencing that in Kentucky. But it is interesting to see how communities change and how maybe the function of a community, particularly when it's a single industry town, begins to shift. And then there's, I think, like a lot of, there can be a lot of growing pains surrounding that and a lot of challenges about how we best support kind of communities in flux.
Speaking as an artist and somebody that works with artists, what's your take on artist communities that are often moving into depressed places nowadays, isolated places where the cost of living isn't so high?
I think it's complicated. I think there's sometimes, I mean, I think we see this a lot, and it's one of the reasons I love Las Vegas, is Las Vegas is a very hospitable place for artists. Not in the summer for its weather, but this space is available to artists for an affordable rent. I think it gets complicated when we talk about gentrification and communities being destabilized by that movement. But I think we've certainly seen a big movements like that during COVID of people moving to less expensive places to have more space and also more spaces to make art, to have larger studios and things like that.
I'd like to hear you talk about your time in Italy, because Italy is such an interesting place. It's a place of modern cities and communities that are built on ruins and layers of ruins, really. And obviously thriving culture there, thriving art scenes. What was your take from your time living in Italy about how they came to terms with their history?
I mean, in Italy, you sort of live alongside the history. I mean, it's so much older than America. I lived there for a little while when I was, I think I was about 20 or 21. I think it's 21. And it was so, you know, I'd grown up in the Midwest, which is a much younger place. So it was all very romantic, the idea of these relics that were sort of like repurposed and continued to be lived alongside and used. I mean, the church, you know, that was built hundreds of years ago was still in use every day.
So you're living in Brooklyn now. You've been all over the world. What's your hope for bringing new media forward along with the traditional print media, sort of keep literary and artistic traditions going?
I think it's a great time to be an artist. I think there are a lot of opportunities and a lot of spaces. I think the death of print that we've been lamenting for a long time is in some ways true and in other ways wrong. I think the way that we deal with print media and engage with print media might change. But I think it certainly continues to exist, but also the internet brings us a lot more opportunities in how we can present work. It can be, comics can be interactive, comics can move. We can literally kind of enter a space in a way you can't totally on a page. So I think it's really exciting.
What about people making a living now as artists and writers? It seems like the people who are funneling up the money are the people who are making the platforms in which artists and writers are sharing their content, and you're getting fewer opportunities for creative people to get an income in the way they used to back in the day.
I mean, I don't know much about that because I've only been working in the arts for about a decade. I mean, it's definitely hard. I've always supplemented my work by having a full-time job, and that's been extremely fulfilling in my ability to work with artists. And I've learned a lot from that. I also think it's for those people who have the temperament and the time to do so, is a very important, valuable thing to be a member of a community where you're fostering artists rather than just making art yourself. So I think there are there are a ton of jobs in the arts. There are way more jobs in the arts than there ever have been. And so I think all things are not dire in the arts. There are still a lot of great opportunities and there's still definitely money to be made.
So CQ, A Journey Through American Loneliness, you're touring behind this right now. The world has opened up a little bit. You're getting to move around and interact with people. What are you hearing from readers that gives you hope, that gives you concern?
I'm hearing a lot of stories about people's loneliness, and which is why I wrote the book, is because we're in the middle of this, what's on the verge of an epidemic of loneliness. And because I wanted to puzzle through that problem, it's been extremely rewarding and wonderful to get so much interaction with readers and a lot of people writing to me and talking about their experiences. So I think that's very hopeful to me. I think the first step is talking about why we feel the way we feel, and then we can figure out how to change it and how to come together.
When you started this project in 2016, that was a very edgy time in American history. What provoked you to say, this is the project I want to tackle? Loneliness is the cause of a lot of our problems right now.
I didn't set out to do it. I mean, that came to me through research. I didn't understand the gravity of loneliness until I began to read about it. And that's, I think, why nonfiction projects can be really interesting, is you can set out with a sort of vague interest and then it becomes sharpened over time and you develop a real perspective.
Well, what's next for you? Do you have another book project in the works? Are you just working on editing?
I'm definitely working a lot at The Verge. I'm also working on a book project about gossip and the history of conversation. So that is in very early stages. I don't totally know how to talk about it yet, but it has been very interesting research.
Yeah, I've actually seen some research about gossip, about how it especially is a positive for groups of women who don't necessarily have access in patriarchal societies that men do.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons that gossip has become feminized and is sort of used as a negative term. There's like a whole history of how the word became applied to women specifically to try to keep women from talking to each other. And by like demonizing gossip and making gossip a negative word, it was meant to dispel groups of people who were maybe going to come together and ask for better circumstances.
Do you have an ideal publication date for this yet?
No, not even close.
Well, you've been listening to Words and Pictures. I'm your host, S.W. Conser, here at the Portland Book Festival. And we've been talking today with Kristen Ratke. She is the art director and deputy publisher at The Believer. I'm sorry, she was the art director and deputy publisher at The Believer. She's now working at The Verge. And she's the author of the graphic novels Imagine Wanting Only This and Seek You, A Journey Through American Loneliness. Kristen, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
And for those listeners who might be interested in finding out more about your work, where would they look?
You can go to kristenradke.com or just Google my name.
And it's spelled?
KristenRadke.
Well, we hope that everybody has been enjoying our special programming as part of the Portland Book Festival for KBOO's end of the year membership drive. Before we go, I'd like to remind all of our listeners that this community radio station needs your support, as our physical studios are remaining closed for the time being. To become a member of KBOO or to arrange for a donation of any size, please visit kboo.fm/give. You can also text KBOO to 44321. Or if you prefer, you can mail a contribution to the station at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, 97214. Again, the webpage is kboo.fm/give. On your mobile device, you can text KBOO to 44321. And of course, you can reach us by mail at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, 97214. Thanks to all our listeners on the radio dial and on the web. You can find an archived version of this show later today at kboo.fm/wordsandpictures. And be sure to follow us on Twitter at wordsandpicture.